Ozymandias is gone, Owen. You destroyed him.
Doesn't make any difference. Who knows what other surprises might be lying in wait for us in any other Empire machine we trusted our bodies to. I don't trust the Haydenmen completely. I'm not a fool. But right now, they're the lesser of two evils. They can only mess with my hand, not my mind. Besides, they did a really good job on this hand. Full sensory analogs, and far more powerful than the original. And I don't have to trim the nails on this one.
It's still a product of the Haydenmen laboratories. And I don't trust anything that comes out of them further than I could spit into a hurricane. The last time the Haydenmen took on the Empire, it was as gods of the genetic church, bringing transformation or death. Become a Haydenman or become extinct, remember? You must have read about it in one of your precious books. And now, here they are again, born again. And so polite and helpful and reasonable, it's downright spooky. I want to jump out of my skin every time one of them approaches me. I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Owen nodded. He knew what she meant. They both looked silently at the augmented men running the golden ship. There were 20 of them, connected to their strange machinery by thick lengths of cable plunging into their bodies, immersed in gleaming technology like a man half-submerged in water, their inhuman minds communing directly with their unfathomable technology, on a level no human mind could understand or appreciate. Each Haydenman had a specific function aboard the ship, and performed it perfectly, for as long as required. They did not suffer from boredom or fatigue, from inspiration or original thought. At least, not while they were working. Perhaps off-duty they were real party animals, but Owen rather doubted it. From what he'd seen of the Haydenmen as they went calmly about rebuilding their strange and unsettling city deep below the frozen surface of the Wolfling world, the augmented men had no attributes that were not strictly logical and functional. The only Haydenman Owen and Hazel had known at all well was Tobias Moon, who'd traveled with them for a while. But he'd spent so long among humans that he'd acquired a surface gloss of humanity, or at least a very good copy of it. He'd worn out most of his energy crystals down the years, losing many abilities and functions along the way, and freely admitted he was only a pale, weak version of the real thing. Still, it had to be said that even on his good days he'd been a disturbing son of a bitch. The glowing eyes and inhuman buzzing voice hadn't helped, but it was in his mind that the real differences lay. Tobias Moon thought differently, even when he tried not to. The augmented men who'd emerged from the tomb of the Haydenmen, after Owen released them from their long restorative sleep, had moved like living gods. Their eyes blazed like the sun, their movements perfect and graceful. They still scared the shit out of Owen, even after the past few months of getting used to them. They called him their Redeemer, and were always quiet and deferential to him, but Owen knew better than to warm to them. He'd studied the old records of their attacks on humanity, seen the sleek golden ships running rings around the slower, clumsier human ships, blowing them apart with perfectly aimed weapons. Seen the tall, shining figures stalking through blazing cities, killing everything that lived. Seen what happened to the humans they experimented on, the living and the dead, in the name of their code of the genetic church. When you no longer have to worry about human emotions or restraints, you can do anything. And the Haydenmen had. They created abominations, seeking always an inhuman perfection of man and machine, a whole that would be greater than the sum of its parts. They would have won the war if there had been more of them and less of humanity, but in the end they were thrown back, their golden ships outnumbered and blown apart, and the few survivors had fled back to the safety of their tomb, hidden deep within the endless night of the Dark Void, beyond the rim of Empire. But they had come very close to wiping out humanity and replacing it with something altogether horrible. Owen remembered what he'd seen in the records, and all the politeness in the world wouldn't make him forget what they had done, and might yet do again. But none of that mattered a damn for the moment. He needed them. The rebellion needed them. And if he was to go up against the Empire, there were going to be times when he'd need an army of trained fighters to meet Lionstone's armies. And that was where the Haydenmen would come in, assuming they could be controlled or at least persuaded to follow orders. Owen was under no illusions about the danger he'd reintroduced to the Empire. Given time, the Hayden men might become a worse threat than Lionstone could ever be. Owen tried not to think about that too much for the time being. It helped that he had so many other problems to worry about. Let's talk of more cheerful things. Assuming we get past Golgotha's defenses as easily as the Hayden men have promised, this will be our first chance to make real contact with the Underground. They're practically the only organized rebellion left in the Empire. Mostly clones and espers, as I understand it, but with a great many useful fellow travelers. Some of them quite influential. We need them on our side. Hopefully, kicking the crap out of the Tax and Tithe HQ will make a good first impression and convince them we're a force to be recognized. Jack Random's name should open a few doors. He's given me the names of a few people he swears we can trust, but they could be years out of date. Or dead. He betrayed a lot of people when the Empire mind techs were working on him in their interrogation center. Which is not going to make him very popular in some quarters. His name could work against us as much as for us. Same with my ancestor Giles, the original Deathstalker. Having a living legend on your side is very useful in recruiting people, but there's always the chance those same people will be disappointed with the reality rather than the perfect legend. Life never used to be this complicated. There was a time when my most arduous decision of the day was which wine to have with my meal. Hazel smiled suddenly.
And you want to give up all this excitement just to go back to that and your dusty books?
Damn right I do. I want my old life back. The best wines, first-class meals every whim indulged, and waited on hand and foot every minute of the day and night. No worries, no responsibilities I couldn't safely delegate to somebody else, and absolutely no chance of being suddenly and nastily killed. I'd go back like a shot if I could.
And leave behind all your friends? And what about me?
Hazel batted her eyes at him coquettishly. Owen winced. Please don't do that. It looks almost unnatural when you do it. Let us change the subject yet again. Was there anything new from Mistworld before we left?
Nothing helpful. Ruby and I knew a few useful people in Mistport, and Jack Random came up with a few more names, but they're all still very suspicious of us. We didn't make any friends on our last visit, and they've learned the hard way down the years to trust no one but themselves. They're waiting for us to commit ourselves first. They want a sign, something bold and audacious, and above all, successful.
Fair enough. This first strike against Golgotha should impress the hell out of them, assuming nothing goes wrong and we don't foul up. We only have one chance at this, and we've had no chance to practice. I've done my best to stop thinking about all the things that could go wrong. It just makes my head hurt and does terrible things to my bladder.
This Stevie Blue, who's supposed to be meeting us dirtside, know anything about him?
You read the same reports I did. Apparently he's an Esper clone in fairly high standing in the Golgotha Underground. Assuming we manage to get together, he'll come back with us to be the Underground's voice in our planning sessions. Reading between the lines, I get the feeling he's a bit of an anarchist, but it takes all sorts to make an empire. Or a rebellion.
What do you expect to happen after we've won and it's all over? We've never really discussed this, any of us. We've spent a lot of time talking about bringing Lionstone down, but none at all discussing what we're going to replace her with.
It's all rather moot at the moment. The odds are stacked against us surviving, let alone winning. But if we do depose her, well, I suppose Parliament and the Company of Lords will put forward suitable candidates, and together we'll choose someone new to become emperor and begin a program of reforms. Clean up the corruption, work in a little more democracy here and there, and of course a pardon for all rebels, past and present. Then we can all get back to leading normal lives again.
To hell with that! We're not going through all this just to settle for the same old with some pretty new window dressing. The whole system is corrupt from top to bottom, and our only chance for real justice is to tear it all down and start again. No more emperor, no more lords, liberation for all clones and espers, full democracy and freedom for everyone.
Everyone? Clones, aliens, espers, everyone?
Damn right. It has to be for everyone. That's what freedom means.
Sounds more like anarchy to me. Not to mention total bloody chaos. If no one knows their place, how can you achieve anything?
I have never known my place, and I've achieved quite a lot. You'd be surprised what people can do, given a chance.
Owen looked at her thoughtfully. Hazel Dock. The Docks used to be nobility not all that long ago. Do I detect just a little overreaction here, by someone just a little ashamed of their aristocratic roots? Surely, Hazel, you must feel some loyalty to the Iron Throne.
Now, one damned bit. The only soft spot I've got for the nobility would be a massive quicksand big enough to swallow the whole lot of them. I was never an aristo. I wasn't born a Dark. I stole the name when I was on the run and needed some false papers in a hurry. Mainly because I liked the sound of it. I didn't want to risk my family finding me again or being sent back to them if I was rounded up.
You never talk about your family. Don't you ever miss them?
No, I bloody don't. If I never hear from them again, that will suit me just fine.
Owen chose his words carefully. Did they abuse you in any way?
No, nothing like that. They were just so bloody boring and nice. I couldn't stand them. Their idea of a wild party was a wine and cheese tasting where you spit the wine out. I had to get away, see the universe, taste some life before I got old and gray like them. You know how it is.
Yes, I suppose I do. But I never had a chance to leave my family. Too many duties and responsibilities. In the end, they all left me, dying one after the other, while I just stood by helplessly and watched it happen. There was never anything I could have done, but it didn't stop me feeling I should have done something. The Boost killed a lot of them while they were still children. Only a few in every generation survive its first onslaught. The price of our genetic gift. Which is why I am all the sons and daughters of my father's line. I'm pretty much all that's left of the clan now. Apparently they found some distant cousin to take over the lordship in my place, but I'm the last of the direct line. When I die, my line dies with me. I'm not sure whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Seems to me we did as much harm as good down the years. But then I suppose that's true of most of the families. And above it all, my father, sacrificing me and everyone else in his endless schemes and intrigues. I never had a life of my own, ever since I was a small child. This mission is the nearest I've come to running away, to doing what I want to do instead of what my father planned. It feels very liberating. He smiled suddenly. You're right. I do tend to lecture people, don't I? One of the more socially acceptable vices of the scholar, I'm afraid. What were we talking about? Oh, yes. Universal suffrage, even for the non-people. I really don't think you've been thinking this through, Hazel. If all the clones and espers were to be freed and enfranchised, the Empire itself would collapse. Its whole economy is based on the exploitation of clones and espers. They turn the wheels that keep things moving. Without them, everything would just fall apart. Food and power distribution would be disrupted. Business would be in chaos. Civilization itself could be threatened. Billions of innocents would suffer.
No one's really innocent if their lives of comfort are based on the suffering of others. If we have to tear civilization apart in order to put it back together again in a more just form, then that's what we'll do. Remember how horrified you were at how people lived on Mistworld? The appalling conditions and short, brutal lives. Think how bad the lives of clones and espers in the Empire must be if they're prepared to risk their lives just for a chance to flee to Mistworld. They're not second-class citizens. They're not even slaves. They're just property. Worked till they dropped because there are always more to replace them. When I said tear it all down, I wasn't kidding. Anything would be better than what we've got now.
I can't argue with that. I spent most of my life ignoring things I didn't want to see. I won't do that anymore. But there's still the problem of the aliens. There are at least 2 new alien species out there somewhere, not counting whatever created the madness maze, all of them at least equal to our own level of technology. Weaken the Empire too much, and they might just walk in and wipe us out. Hazel shrugged.
We can't afford to think about all the possibilities, or we'd go mad. There'd always be some good reason why we should put things off. Lionstone has to fall if the people are to be free and if you and I are to live in safety. All we can do is take things one step at a time. We'll worry about the aliens as and when they make an appearance. They don't have to be enemies, you know. And anyway, you're a fine one to talk. You're the one who woke a whole army of Hayden men from their tomb. The only reason the Hayden men aren't still the official enemies of humanity is because the AIs on Shub are worse. I suppose you'll be suggesting we team up with them next.
I'd rather cut off my head with a rusty saw. The Hayden men are a calculated risk. Shub, on the other hand, will settle for nothing less than the extermination of the human species. I may be reckless, but I am not stupid. They both looked up sharply as one of the augmented men approached them. Hazel surreptitiously turned her reassembled projectile weapon so that it tracked the Haydenman's progress. Owen let his hand drift casually closer to his disruptor. The augmented man loomed over them, his movements inhumanly graceful. His eyes blazing so brightly, Owen and Hazel couldn't look at them directly. His face held nothing that could be recognized as a human emotion, and when he spoke, his voice was a harsh, grotesque buzzing.
We have left hyperspace and are currently in orbit over Golgotha. The ship's computers have made contact with the orbiting security satellites and persuaded them that our presence here is entirely natural and unthreatening. Our cloaking device will conceal us from passing ships and planet-based sensors as we descend toward the surface. There will be no difficulties. You may prepare yourselves for the drop.
Thank you. But the Hayden man was already walking away. They weren't much for small talk. Hazel pulled a face at the Hayden man's departing back and then looked at Owen.
So, are you ready for the drop, or do you need to disappear into the toilet again?
I don't think you could get another drop out of me if you used a siphon. Let's get down to the cargo bay. It's time to get this show on the road.
Damn right.
They made their way back through the hulking alien machinery, climbing carefully over it when there was no clear path around it. The gleaming metals felt uncomfortably cold, and some of it shimmered uncertainly as though it wasn't always there. Owen and Hazel gave the machinery as much room as they could, kept their hands strictly to themselves, and descended floor by floor to the empty cargo bay. The vast steel cavern was lined with thick-ribbed cables that curled around and over each other in eye-numbing confusion, but the only equipment set out in all the empty space were two standard gravity sleds and a small package of carefully prepared code disks to be fed into the tax and tithe computers. Owen and Hazel checked the sleds over thoroughly, just in case, and then settled down to wait. It wouldn't be long now. The sleds were really nothing more than a flat surface, disturbingly like a coffin lid, with an anti-grav motor, a set of controls, two built-in disruptors, and a force shield to protect the rider from the wind. Pretty basic, but all they'd need, if nothing went wrong. Owen hefted the computer codes in his hand. A very small package to do so much potential damage. Rather like Hazel, in fact. He smiled at the thought and looked across at her. She had her sword out and was polishing the blade with a filthy piece of rag. Owen was never entirely sure how he felt about her at any given time. He respected her, certainly, and admired her skill with weapons. She was one of the finest fighters he'd ever fought beside. And he certainly respected the fire in her voice when she spoke of freedom and justice, even if he didn't always agree with her solutions. She'd come barging into his life like a runaway horse, saving him from almost certain death, and then proceeded to shake up and question everything he thought he believed in. And somewhere along the line, quite against his will, he'd fallen in love with her. He hadn't told her and wondered if he ever would. He was everything she claimed to despise, a naive aristo with more ancestors than sense. He liked to think she respected him as a fighter, but beyond that, he had no idea how she felt about him. Besides, he was a death stalker. He had a duty to marry someone of his own station. Except, he wasn't an aristocrat anymore. Lionstone had publicly declared him an outlaw and stripped him of every rank and privilege, which meant he was free to do as he liked. And Hazel was brave and true, with a great smile and eyes to die for. Pity about her hair. She was smart and quick, and determined not to take any shit from anyone, least of all him. He loved her. In a way that made him realize, He'd never really loved anybody else. Kathy had been his lover for several years, but she was his mistress, which was really just another kind of servant. She'd been an Empire spy and had tried to kill him when he was outlawed. He'd killed her without hesitating. There had never been much love in his family, particularly from his father, who was always busy somewhere else, so he'd learned to live without love. And then Hazel burst into his life, and everything changed. Sometimes he couldn't look at her without catching his breath, and his heart quickened when she spoke to him. Her infrequent smiles could put him in a good mood that lasted for hours. To be honest, he could have done without love. It complicated their relationship and distracted him from more important things. But he didn't seem to have any choice in the matter. He loved her despite all her many faults, or even perhaps because of them, even if he could never tell her. At best, she'd laugh at him or tell him to go to hell. At worst, she might be kind and understanding as she said no, and he didn't think he could stand that. He knew nothing of love or lovers, but even he knew hope was better than disillusionment. An alarm sounded quietly through his comm implant, and he saw Hazel's head snap up as she heard it too. She put her sword away and climbed aboard her gravity sled, ready for business as always. Owen slipped the computer disks into an inside pocket, zipped it shut, and powered up his sled. A view from the ship's sensors appeared before his eyes, patched in through his implant, showing the main landing pad stretched out below. There were ships everywhere, of all shapes and sizes, growing steadily larger as the Hayden Man ship descended at speed. There wasn't room anywhere for the Hayden Man ship to set down, and that was all right. It wasn't intending to land. Owen grinned. The plans called for the Hayden Man ship to drop the cloaking about now. Then things should get really interesting. They were almost on top of the starport control tower when the cloaking device shut off. People stopped believing their sensors, took one look at the huge, sleek, golden craft hovering right above them, and launched straight into a mass panic. There was a lot of screaming and shouting, and a great deal of running around and around in circles. Owen didn't blame them. The last time Golgotha had seen a Hayden Man ship this close, they'd come in force as the enemies of humanity, to wipe out the homeworld's defenses. They'd come uncomfortably close, too, according to some suppressed records that Owen had happened across while looking for something else. The visual feed cut off, and Owen smiled across at Hazel, who grinned back. In that much chaos and confusion, no one was going to notice two small gravity sleds. Owen gripped the controls of his sled firmly. Only a few more moments, and he wouldn't have time to feel nervous anymore. He hoped Hazel was feeling as confident as she looked. It would be nice if one of them was. The alarm sounded briefly in his ear again, and the great cargo bay doors cracked open below them. The temperature in the hold dropped sharply, and Owen could see bright sunlight through the widening crack. He raised his sled slightly so that it was hovering just above the floor. Hazel lifted hers, too, and moved in close beside him. The cargo bay doors opened wider, and now they could see the landing pads below. It looked a long way down. Owen took a deep breath and directed his sled down and through the opening doors. Hazel followed close behind. Together, they dropped out of the belly of the great golden ship and plummeted down toward the landing field. The bay door slammed shut behind them, and the Hayden Man ship shot away, already pursued by half a dozen Imperial attack ships, firing everything they'd got. The golden ship's force shields flared briefly here and there, but never even looked like going down. No one noticed two tiny figures heading silently for the ground, too small for the heavy-duty port sensors, too fast for the naked eye. The plan was very simple. The Hayden Man ship would hang around, drawing attention to itself, while Hazel and Owen got on with their mission. It would take some time for the starport to come up with anything big enough to worry the golden ship. By that time, the mission should be over, and the ship would return to pick Owen and Hazel up again. They would then depart at great speed, drop back into hyperspace, and be gone before the Empire could get its act together. A very simple plan. Owen believed in simple plans. The more complicated a plan was, the more chances there were of something going wrong. He wasn't worried about anything happening to the Hayden Man ship. The strength of Hademan IV shields was legendary, and the ship itself was bulging with all kinds of weapons, some of which Owen didn't even recognize. He'd made the augmented men promise to use their weapons sparingly and only in self-defense. It wouldn't do to start the rebellion with a bloody Hademan massacre. It would give entirely the wrong impression, and first impressions were important. The augmented men had nodded very politely and said yes and no and, of course, in all the right places. Owen had crossed his fingers and hoped for the best. The sled's foreshield snapped on automatically as he dropped like a stone, protecting him from the rushing wind. Speed was all that mattered for the moment, to get out of the starport and disappear into the crowded city before either he or Hazel could be spotted. The pastel towers of the city loomed up before him, and he slowed a little so he could duck and dodge around them. The foreshield snapped off to conserve power. The wind whistled past Owen, cold and bracing, blowing tears from his eyes. He narrowed his gaze and concentrated on the map he'd memorized earlier. It wasn't that far, but the route was tricky, particularly if you weren't intending to follow the established traffic paths. Owen flashed past a floating red light and tucked in close beside a tower to avoid an oncoming tour bus. He had a brief glimpse of open-mouthed faces from windows on both sides, and then he was through and in the clear again. He grinned and activated his comm unit on the shielded channel.
Still with me, Hazel?
Damn right I am. You'll have to do better than that to shake me.
I thought you said you hadn't had much practice on a gravity sled before.
I haven't. Half the time I feel like I'm riding a crashing elevator. But I can follow anywhere you lead, Deathstalker.
Wouldn't doubt it for a minute, Hazel. We're almost there, so stand ready to guard my back. Remember, they strip these sleds down to basics for extra speed, which means they only have minimum shields. One good hit from a disruptor and they'll go down faster than a backstreet whore. So I'm counting on you not to let anyone hit us. On the other hand, please also remember we're supposed to be the good guys here, so try not to kill anyone except the Imperial Guards. It's important we make the right impression here.
Details, details. You concentrate on your map and leave the fighting to me. That's how we work best.
Owen felt a strong answer to that rising up in him, but he forced it down. He was going to learn to be polite and charming to Hazel if it killed him. He pressed on through the city, whipping back and forth between the towers and fighting the sudden uprounds. The city was only just waking up, still wrapped in early morning light. The sky was a bloody red, painting the pastel towers with crimson shadows. There was hardly any air traffic yet, but that would change in a hurry once the sun was up and the business day began. The plan called for Owen and Hazel to get into the tax and tithe HQ, do the dirty, and get the hell out, while the skies were still comparatively uncrowded. Owen piled on the speed, and the foreshield snapped on again, giving his tearing eyes and numbed face a break. He and Hazel were on their own till they could land and make contact with the underground, and right now he felt very alone and extremely vulnerable. He could feel Hazel crowding close behind him. He didn't look back to make sure. He didn't need to. All of those who'd passed through the madness maze were linked to each other now, in some deep, fundamental way that none of them understood yet, but none of them doubted. It was a kind of low-level esp, an unquestioning certainty as to where the others were at any given moment. They couldn't read each other's thoughts, for which Owen, for one, was very grateful, but as Hazel had already proved, whatever gifts or talents one possessed, the others now had too, as though they'd always had them. Owen could feel Hazel's presence at his back. It felt reassuring. He whipped around a tower so close he could have reached out and trailed his fingertips across the windows flashing past, and then, right before him, dead bang where it was supposed to be, was the tax and tithe headquarters in Tower Chojiro. Owen grinned fiercely and opened his secure comm channel again.
Almost there, so brace yourself. And Hazel, don't use the boost unless you have to. There are things about it you don't know. It's unwise to use it too often.
Nag, nag. You always were a bit of an old woman, Deathstalker.
Owen decided he wasn't going to answer that one either, and made himself concentrate on Tower Chojiro as it loomed up before him. He cut his power and slowed steadily, but kept the foreshield up. The sled's built-in cloaking device was supposed to be keeping him invisible as far as the tower's sensors were concerned, but he didn't feel like taking chances now he'd got this close to the objective. Tower Chojiro was the tallest and ugliest of the immediate towers, a gleaming monument of glass and steel, the clan colors and signals clearly marked.
It was also undoubtedly bristling with hidden weapons and other nasty surprises. The Hayden men had assured Owen on more than one occasion that his and Hazel's sleds had been carefully adjusted so that they would slip past the tower's defenses unmolested. But of necessity, there had been no way to test this in advance. Owen shrugged mentally. It was a bit late to be worried now. Either it would work, or he and Hazel would end up spread across the tower's energy fields like flies on a windscreen, and the rebellion would have to start somewhere else. Oddly, Owen discovered that he didn't feel particularly nervous. The Hayden men had assured him their devices would work, and he had no reason to distrust them. Not over that, anyway. Everything else, maybe. He took a firm hold on the controls, braced himself, and headed the sled straight for the top floor of the tower. The windows came flying toward him at incredible speed. Owen just had time to realize he must have passed safely through the tower's force shields before the sled slammed through the toughened steel glass window as though it wasn't there. The gravity sled screeched to a halt some 20 feet past the shattered window, and its force shield snapped off. Owen released his death grip from the controls and stepped down, just a little shakily. He looked quickly about him, but the top floor of Tower Chojiro was deserted, just as it was supposed to be.